Raw footage coming out of the cinema and into your ears.
Everything is great. Everything is grand. I got the whole wide world in the palm of my hand.
Everything is perfect. It's falling into place. I can't seem to wipe this smile off my face.
Life's a happy song, and there's someone by my side to sing along.
Welcome to Raw Footage, episode number 22. And as you might have worked out from the unusual opening, this episode is going to be a little bit special. After weeks, if not months, of Oscar build-up and the epic-length Oscar preview show I've just released, it's time to enter a new phase of Raw Footage by watching a couple of films that I saw simply for entertainment value, not because they were getting Oscar buzz. Even though one of the films today did actually get Oscar nominated, but I'll probably be talking about that in a bit as well. And in this episode, we've also, for the first time, got a special guest, which I will be explaining all about in the next link.
Honey, let's get this thing going.
As you might have already worked out from the opening, the first film on today's episode is The Muppets, and the theme for today's podcast is taken from the Muppet soundtrack. It's the first, and indeed the last, big number in the film Life's a Happy Song. Now, The Muppets is, I think, well, it's certainly been marketed as a kids' film or a family film. And I frequently say that I'm not sure this film would be suitable for kids or kids would enjoy this, or extrapolating what my opinion of how kids would react to a film. Well, the reason that The Muppets was out this week is that it's half term here in England, where school children have a week off from school. And because it was half term, my goddaughter, Holly, who is 10 years old, came down to stay with us. And this seems like a perfect opportunity. So I went to The Muppets, this family-friendly film, with a 10-year-old girl in tow, and took this opportunity to interview her and get her reaction as to how much she enjoyed The Muppets. It was an interesting experience. Interviewing Holly in the back of this car as we were going home from Bristol back to Bath. And occasionally you can hear my father interject because he was driving the car at the time. But we do have Holly's thoughts, or some of Holly's thoughts, on The Muppets just after we came out of the cinema. And then later, after Holly had gone home, I did record some fuller thoughts about the film. My personal reaction rather than the reaction of a 10-year-old girl. So it was an interesting experiment. I'm not sure it 100% works, but when I was going to see a family-friendly film anyway, having a 10-year-old girl in the house was too good an opportunity to pass up. So that's what I did. So you'll be hearing Holly's thoughts, as well as mine, after I've played the trailer.
We're trying to get the old gang back together again.
We haven't done this in a long time.
Your fans never left you, the world hasn't forgotten.
Sure, it's impossible, but we've got to try.
It's time to play the music.
It's time to light the lights.
It's time to meet the Muppets.
Yes! Come on, guys, let's go!
I can't believe we're all back together.
Yeah!
Sorry, I'm super excited.
The Muppets have always been about artistic integrity, not cheap tricks.
Check it out! Fart shoes!
This is going to be a really short movie.
Throw me over.
I think that's an electric fence.
God damn it!
It's an electric fence.
Yep.
Maybe you don't need the whole world to love you, you know? Maybe you just need one person.
Oh, Kermit!
I don't care what anybody says. I believe in you. And you.
You think we should have rented a bigger car?
So, Holly, we have just come out of the Muppets. What did you think of it?
Weird.
Weird in a good way or weird in a bad way?
Both.
Well, did you enjoy the film?
Yes.
Did you have any special... Yeah, was there one particular place where you enjoyed it more than others?
When Miss Piggy started hitting everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the characteristics of Miss Piggy, is her kung fu ability. So, did you...
Yes, Miss Piggy is a wonderful invention.
What did you think of the singing in it? And the dancing?
Funny some of the time.
Did you like the songs?
Some of them, because some were just repeated.
Yeah. But I did like the one they played over the credits. I think that was the best one out of them. Was it Life's a Happy Song or something like that? And there was lots of... cameos who I recognised, but you probably didn't. Was there anybody you recognised in the film?
No.
I mean, and you're not that big a fan of the Muppets. I mean, you're not that aware of them.
No.
So for someone like you, who hasn't seen the Muppets before, and has little sort of knowledge of them, would you recommend this film?
Yes.
So you did enjoy it and you had a good time with it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. Oh, and another thing, what did you think of the moments where the characters spoke directly to camera? Like when Mary said, this is going to be a really short movie, directly to camera, sort of breaking the fourth wall, that's what they call it.
It's just a bit weird.
Yeah. For my money, they either should have cut it out or had more of it in there, because there's one or two moments which break the fourth wall, but...
Well, there are precedents in Shakespeare.
Yeah, but they didn't do it enough. I mean, they did it sort of like two or three times, and that was it. But, yeah, I mean, that was one weird thing. I mean, a lot of the cameos were kind of odd. I mean, there was one by James Carville, who's a political analyst on Fox TV. It was totally bizarre. I mean, there was Feist in there, who I barely recognised, let alone any kids in there. So, yeah. I too enjoyed the film, and I too have not that much connection to the Muppets. So, yeah, I think... that actually goes down as a recommendation.
Hold on, baby. Let's save this for later.
So you now find me back in Bath, back in Green Park, next to the Odeon Cinema. Since I'm out already, I've decided to make it a double bill day. But the next film we're going to see is by no means useful for children, so I sent Holly home. it was always likely that my attempt to interview Holly and get her opinions on the Muppets was going to end with a monosyllabic response. But the fact that a 10-year-old girl was staying in the house at the moment and I was going to see the Muppets anyway, it was too good an opportunity to pass up. So I can actually say that 10-year-olds will like this film, even if they won't understand it. Since I've got a little bit of time here before the next film of the day, I'm going to give some further thoughts and maybe some fuller thoughts about The Muppets. This is a film which has a deep, deep reverence and love for The Muppets. It shows so much respect to the brand of The Muppets. You might almost say it shows too much respect to the brand of The Muppets. It's not a film that is an easy entry point, I don't think. I mean, as Holly said earlier, I mean, she found it weird, but she enjoyed it because, you know, there's singing and dancing and wacky stuff happens. So it is enjoyable. But, yeah, I think it's kind of summed up when Holly said that she likes it when Miss Piggy started hitting people. I mean, for somebody like me, who just about remembers repeats of The Muppets, sort of, I think they were on Channel 4 when I was a kid, but I have no strong connection to The Muppets, and I know that, you know, one of Miss Piggy's traits is her kung fu thing, which in a lot of ways shows just how 70s the character of Miss Piggy is, because it was sort of like that period where Bruce Lee first introduced the world to kung fu, or martial arts anyway, and suddenly everybody was kung fu fighting. Those steps were fast as lightning. Well, yeah, whatever. So the fact that Holly didn't know that Miss Piggy does kung fu, and the fact that in the film it pretty much comes out of nowhere, I think shows that this is not an entry point film. But I'm not sure it needs to be, because, like Holly said, she enjoyed it and she would recommend it to her friends who, like her, don't share a genuine love of The Muppets. But I truly, truly think that this is a film for my generation and the generation above me. I mean, I'm 33 and I just about get it, and I just about get the love. So, say, 35 and upwards, I think that's who this film was made for, and made by. I mean, Jason Segel, who, as well as starring in the film, co-wrote the film, obviously has a genuine love for Muppets and puppetry in general. I mean, his character in the underrated film Forgetting Sarah Marshall was a puppeteer. So that's obviously something that's in his background. And he has got this reverence, and he's got all his friends in. I mean, like I was saying earlier, the cameos in this film are bizarre. I mean, young kids are not going to go, oh look, there's Emily Blunt. Oh look, there's Neil Patrick Harris. Oh look, there's Zach Galifianakis. Oh look, there's Mickey Rooney. If there's one cameo in this film which is going to go soaring over the heads of kids watching it, it's Mickey Rooney. I mean, I barely know who the guy is. I mean, he's been around for God knows how long. He must be in his 90s by now. But whatever. Mickey Rooney's in it. He appears briefly. It's fun if you know who Mickey Rooney is. And, I mean, there's lots of things like that. I mean, suddenly there's Dave Grohl. You know, it's fun star-spotting, and these people obviously love The Muppets just as much as the makers of this film do. Overall, this is an enjoyable film. A very postmodern film, but in a way not postmodern enough, because there's one or two moments where the fourth wall is broken, but not too many of them. And there are some quite nice touches, like travelling by map to save time in travelling, and to collect people via montage, which was quite clever. And then it subtly puts in an extra bit to the montage which didn't need to be there, and was kind of funny. So it's very surreal, I guess, kind of postmodern, and not for kids, but as you heard earlier, kids will still enjoy this film, and I do think I recommend it to pretty much everybody. One thing I didn't mention, and I really, really should have, is the music. The songs were written by Brett McKenzie of Flight of the Conchords, and the director of the film was James Bobin, who is the director of Flight of the Conchords. So there is that kind of clever, self-referential comedy in the music that you do get from Flight of the Conchords. And the song Man or Muppet from the film has been nominated for an Oscar as Best Original Song. And I think that's reasonable, and I probably think it should win. But for my money, the track that I used as the theme for this episode, Life's a Happy Song, is a much better song and would have been much more worthy of the Oscar than Man or Muppet. And I must admit that Life's a Happy Song has been stuck in my head since I saw this film. So the music overall is very good, and there's some really bizarre touches. Like, at one point, Jack Black gets strapped down into a barber chair, and a barbershop quartet made up of Muppets surround him and start doing a Muppet barbershop quartet version of Smells Like Teen Spirit by Nirvana, which is utterly bizarre. Especially as they have to alter quite a lot of the lyrics of that song. I mean, if you've ever heard the lyrics to Smells Like Teen Spirit, it is by no means suitable for kids. Which is continued in pretty much the very next scene in the film, where a group of chickens do a version of CeeLo Green's Fuck You by clucking. So I guess it would be Cluck You, although in the soundtrack it is listed as the radio-friendly Forget You. So, yeah, strange choices, but bizarrely I think they work. Ultimately, The Muppets is a wacky, all-singing, all-dancing film, which has been made for nostalgia fans of the original Muppets and not for children. If they ever do make another Muppets film, and this has been very financially successful, so there's a fair chance there will be another Muppets film, it'd be very interesting to see which direction they go in, because I really don't know where you can go from this. Do they continue with the nostalgia trip, or do they try and bring in the younger generation more? It's going to be an interesting balancing act to work out. So, thanks to Holly for agreeing somewhat to appear in this podcast. I think that Holly is going to be staying with us a lot in the future in half term and summer holidays, so she might be appearing on this podcast in the future when there's a family friendly film I'm going to see anyway. It wasn't the most in-depth interview or in-depth review, but it's better that than me extrapolating saying I don't think kids would enjoy this. So, yeah, Holly might be making more appearances in the future. And I think that's kind of cool.
Well, baby, you have more for me? I admire your stamina.
Completely changing direction. The next film on today's episode is The Woman in Black, which is a ghost story starring Daniel Radcliffe and produced by Hammer, which is based on the book by Susan Hill, but it's much more culturally significant impact has been in the play adaptation, which has been running in one West End theatre since 1989. It has solidly been appearing in this one theatre for 23 years, and is the second longest running play in the West End after The Mousetrap. So I think that's probably where the film adaptation is coming from rather than the book. So it's a culturally popular ghost story that eventually they were going to make a film of, and they have. And here's the trailer.
So, you're from London. Trying to sell Eel Marsh House.
Yes.
You won't find a local buyer. The sooner the house is sold, the sooner people can move on.
When we told you to.
You said you have a son. Go home to him.
Don't go chasing shadows, Arthur.
And I'm back in my home away from home, Memorial Gardens, where it's got quite dark. And I've just come out of seeing The Woman in Black, starring Daniel Radcliffe and Kieran Hines, and also a small role for Janet McTeer, which was kind of interesting. But, yeah. The Woman in Black, directed by James Watkins and written by Jane Goldman, the co-writer of Kick-Ass and X-Men First Class. So, basically, Matthew Vaughan's co-conspirator in all of his films, I think. Well, certainly the ones he's directed. But this time she's written the script alone. And it's pretty good, actually. This is a bog-standard ghost story. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It doesn't have any ambiguity. It doesn't have any scientific methodology behind it. I mean, maybe it's just the type of films that I watch, but that is the first film I've seen in a long time where there is undoubtedly a ghost. She is undoubtedly affecting people and more or less killing people. There is some questions about exactly her methodology and exactly why she's doing what she's doing, particularly right at the end, where there was kind of a happy ending. Well, it's not a happy ending, but it's not a depressing end. Well, it is a depressing ending, or well, it's difficult to explain, but I'm not going to spoil it. Suffice it to say that, given what we've seen throughout the film, I don't think the ending should have happened the way it did. And I'll just leave it at that. If you want to see the film, if you don't want to see the film, that's going to be enough, I think. So, yeah, Daniel Radcliffe, I think this is possibly his first truly adult role. He's in the film, he's old enough to be married, he's old enough to have a 4-year-old son, he's old enough to be a more or less successful London solicitor who gets sent to this bleak house in the middle of nowhere in order to wrap up the estate of this woman who's died and has left a haunted house. He does a fine job. I mean, I have seen some criticism of his performance saying it's not up to snuff, but I had no problem with it. I mean, it's not that demanding a role, I don't think. All he pretty much has to do is look confused and or terrified, and he does that perfectly. I mean, like I said, it's a bog standard ghost story. You don't need anything more than that. And he delivers what is needed for the film to carry the plot forward perfectly. I mean, there is no problem with it. And as I said, there's no surprises or twists in the film, which is something you kind of expect nowadays. And it's kind of refreshing that it is just a straight ahead ghost story. And there were moments which, even though I could more or less see them coming, there were still one or two moments which really, really did chill me to the bone. I mean, there is some really fucking scary stuff in this film. I mean, because for once I went to an evening screening, it was quite a full cinema. And I was sat between two women who were about my age, maybe slightly younger, but I didn't know them, and I was just sat between them. And it was almost more fun sort of sensing their reactions than sort of reacting myself. But it's kind of interesting seeing a ghost story in that full of film, because there's an audible sort of like, you know, exhale of breath after something scary happens. You know, we've seen something scary, we've all survived it, we've all experienced it. There is something to be said for that. So maybe that's something to do with my generally positive reactions to the film. I mean, I don't think there's anything especially wrong with the film apart from the ending, which it's difficult to explain, so I'm not going to, but I did have a tiny issue with the ending. But other than that, it's chilling, moments of genuine terror, unsettling, uneasy. It does everything you want it to, and it does it very well. So if you're looking for a solid ghost story, then there really is nothing wrong with The Woman in Black. I wasn't sure coming out of the film, so I did double check, and this is the first film that Jane Goldman has written which didn't have any influence at all from Matthew Vaughan. So Jane Goldman's spreading her wings and providing a really good script for what is needed. this kind of grand gothic ghost story is not something we've seen for quite some time, I don't think. And I think that's a little bit of a shame, because this is a very effective film. If you want to go and see something which will make you jump, which will creep the hell out of you, then The Woman in Black is highly recommended, because it does just that. And it does it with great verve and impact. So we now officially enter the post-awards season lull. The next episode in the Raw Footage feed will be a review of the Oscars, which hopefully won't stretch to another 3 hours. But I will be giving my thoughts on what happened at the Oscars, which will be happening this coming Sunday. But after that, there's not a lot to look forward to. Looking at the release schedule, there might not be another episode after the review show for another 3 weeks. So basically, you can expect another episode of Raw Footage when it's there. I mean, there's nothing 100% scheduled for the future. So until the next time there's a film I want to see at the cinema, that was Raw Footage. I've been your host, Colin Gaisley from Bath, and I'll see you the next time I come out of the cinema and into your ears.
Hello.
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 Websites can be found at raw-footage.co.uk. Feedback can be sent to rawfootagepodcast@gmail.com. Music in this episode comes from the Muppets soundtrack, used without permission but with a thin grasp of the fair use policy. Idents provided by Dr. Brandy Sexy Voice. Trailer audio is included under the doctrine of fair use.
Load up on, bring your friends, it's fun to lose and to pretend. She's overboard and self-assured. Oh no, I know a dirty word.